Men...
yeah, that's right.
Harry, me and Nasi, we were in... This story, still we're back in Bahrain for this story, mate.
Hold on, Brucey, just because we're on the clock. Oh, rolling, right. Hello and welcome to The Winners Never Quit, Series 5, Episode 2, Part 2 of the first instalment. We hope you enjoyed that. Next up, we are going to hopefully answer some of the questions that we had. We got a little bit sidetracked, but all in good fun after a few rattlers. So yeah, back with the same gang. Adam.
Hi, I'm Adam. Hi, nice to meet you.
Brucey.
Nutty.
And we've actually got our good friend Harry on the mic as well, who's going to steer this conversation so we don't get sidetracked. Talk about Bangkok escapades.
Wouldn't know about those.
Yeah, wouldn't know about those.
It's only Brucey that knows about
those. Yeah, yeah. Trips to Bahrain. Yeah. And snaggy dits of being up in Sennybridge. So yeah, H, how's it going, mate? You all right?
Good, mate, good. Fantastic podcast so far, guys.
Thank you. We'll pay you later.
In beers.
So yeah, H, if you want to answer the first question, mate, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. So this one is for Al. Why do you want to spend 45 days rowing three on, three off across the North Atlantic?
That's actually all.
You know that says all, right? Not Al.
Oh, fuck.
It's fine, you're Scottish. Fine.
Al. We have different English here, boy. Yeah. Start again.
Right, no, that's staying in. That's brilliant. Right, so why do you want to row across the Atlantic? I'll go first. It's a question I've thought long and hard about. And for me, that physical endeavour of pitching yourself sort of, you know, your mental fortitude against the elements, there's no better challenge in life. And it's where I feel most alive. And it's just prolonging growing up a little bit. You know, getting another adventure in there before I have to settle down and have kids, so... That's a big reason for me.
As Brucey likes to say, anything to get away from the real world, isn't it, mate?
Oh, yeah, fine. Do you want to answer this question next?
I'll go next. Yeah, for me, it's... I wouldn't say that it's I want to do this row across the North Atlantic. It's more that I have to, in terms of I like to make a lot of my life decisions on how I'll look back on the decisions I made when I'm 90 years old. How will I feel about the decisions I made when I was younger? Being proud of the decisions I made, and also, like Jack said, building a legacy for the future family as well. And so it's the fact that this is going to be an incredibly taxing expedition where we'll all find out a lot about each other, ourselves, do ourselves proud. And you've only got one spin on this planet, so you may as well live an extraordinary life, which is kind of the mantra that I've lived ever since I changed my life direction a couple of years ago. And this was the natural course of taking on something pretty wild with a group of three pretty solid blokes.
Who are they?
That was very nice.
That was actually really well put, wasn't it?
It's available on YouTube as well.
My answer's going to be gash.
Shall I go next, mate?
Go on, Brucey.
I was about to say something fairly heartfelt, Nutty. I like to live depends on who you ask, really, fairly hedonistic lifestyle, and I try to do one like big or one long event every year. It's like my annual kicking the stones to remind myself that you still exist, really. It's important. So if you're gonna hard work and hard fun, I guess.
Yeah.
Sort of
you don't do things by halves, do you, Brucey? It's always extreme hedonism or extreme difficult pursuit, you know?
Yeah, not if I can help it, really. But yeah, it's a fairly exciting thing. In my opinion, it's adventure in its rawest form. Mm-hmm. Like self-sufficient, everyone's like, we're all stuck in that fucking boat and so low in the water, the horizon's 4 miles away for 45 days. That's our world. It's very small. Like nothing really fucking matters apart from could we have rowed any further that day, or could... like, we look after each other, and is like the welfare of the boat and the crew as good as it could be. And then, it sort of gives me permission, allows me to permit myself to tear it up when I get off the boat.
Which you will.
Yeah, which you have been today. You hit the nail on the head there, I like that. When you're on the boat, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Life's so simple.
Yeah. I think it couldn't if you tried to let it.
Yeah. You wouldn't care.
It's impossible to care about anything else outside of that boat after the first few days when you get used to that.
The purest form of flow state where you're just dealing with survival and the mission at hand rather than taxes and relationships and everything else, you know. It's just everything's confined into your immediate vicinity.
Yeah. Like even coming down to that, you don't have all your food's on the boat.
Yeah.
You know, you put your hand in that cabin, you pick out your three meals.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got. Like, no, yeah, it's just so similar. I fucking love it.
I love it.
It's fucking disgusting, really, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, it's good because for me, I'd like to do it with my oppos and achieve something, you know, bigger than myself.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing to do with friends.
Yeah, and the first thing, kind of when we first spoke as well, Nutty, was the fact that the pleasure you take in doing it for its own sake. You know, you just love being out there grafting and taking on difficult adventures with the boys, and that's something. It's a lens with which you need to look through in order to be successful in something like this. So, yeah.
And another sort of side thing as well, like raising money for a great charity. We and I pull really well, and what charities I think get a lot of stick for, and sometimes rightfully so. You know, you're about these big charities, I won't name names, but their chief execs are on however much thousands, yet they've got old biddies working in the shop for them for nothing. But Paul set up this charity through his own, because of his own battles with mental health, and then to launch the charity, you know, ran around the coast of Great Britain. So if we can raise like a, you know, 50k for him, and they want to build this whole retreat, I think it'd be fucking wild, mate.
It will.
Definitely.
But yeah, definitely. Man. Definitely.
I just feel like it's such a privilege to, it's like head up Flagship Expedition this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a privilege to be a part of that. And I was always slightly, like Jack was saying, slightly dubious about the, how to say it, like without sounding like, I guess the corporate nature of these charities. And it's not like I didn't trust Jack or doubted anything he said, but after meeting Paul Minter for myself and hearing his story for myself, and I thought, fuck, it's a two-way thing, you know, we do something for, it's a mutually supportive endeavour.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this and do it for this reason.
Yeah.
And it also ties in very nicely with kind of the individual journeys we've all had with these three, all with 30 years in the military, the decade each plus, you know, and the fact that they're all getting out around a similar time. And that can be one of the hardest transitions for a veteran as they come into the civvy world mentally more than physically, obviously. And I've had my own fair share of mental health battles over the last half decade. And the fact that there's almost one veteran or serving suicide per day in the UK. And we all know how important it is to have that information to prevent things when you hit rock bottom, so you know how to pull yourself out. And that's exactly what Head Up do with their retreat, and also with the knowledge that they share regarding all of the tools and principles that you can use to change your, like, turn your life around when things are going south. So, Paul is he looks at things from the complete holistic perspective, exactly. And so, you know, things from animal therapy, cold water therapy, diet and gut health, all of those things aren't ignored, and they play a big part in the minutiae of putting your life back in a positive direction and focusing on things that change your mental health, you know.
Mate, no, that was a good one. That was pretty deep, mate.
Good
question.
Just to build on what Az was saying, in another life, I think you would have made a great soldier, you know. And I really admire the way Head Up Charity goes about their approach with, like, the... Oh, fuck, I fucked it. What I was going to say.
No, I know. Right. I know. Bruce's had a few pieces. No, but it was good. And you're right, because in the military, there's a big thing on this is the way it has to be done, you know, because it's the way it's always been done. But Head Up, like you said, that holistic approach, you can't get animal therapy, I don't think, in the military.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they don't talk about nutrition, you know, the power of exercise. It's just, and this isn't just for military guys or girls. It can be used for everyone. You know, you're suffering from depression. It's take these pills. Well, why not try? Why is the first thing medication, you know? Yeah. Not saying that isn't
can't
a good
work,
thing.
Yeah,
can't work, but it's
like... I remember what I was about to say, all right. It's fucked it. Yeah. The prevention's often better than...
Editor, can you cut that?
Yeah.
Oh, you would do, wouldn't you? You wouldn't see me off like that.
We don't have an editor, Brucey. Yeah. We can't afford that.
The philosophical approach, like the awareness of how to deal with problems before they arise, I guess.
Yeah.
How to help your own self out of in a situation.
No, having those coping mechanisms.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be first question.
Great
boys.
First question.
Yeah, yeah, nice and deep.
We managed to keep it on track.
Yeah, well done. Well, yeah.
Cheers. Great success.
Go on, H, next question, bro.
Rattler's really nice, by the way.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, great answer, Al. Thanks for that.
Nice. You had 5 minutes to plan that joke and it paid off.
When you tell people you're rowing the Atlantic, what's their response?
For Al again?
For Al, yeah. Go on, Adam, because we've rowed the Atlantic before. So
yeah, true.
I think maybe you're the best person to answer this.
Yeah, kind of. I try not to tell people as well, generally, because it opens up a can of worms of a load of questions. But when they say, why are you in the UK for the next 6 months? That makes no sense. It's like, well, I've actually got a pretty big expedition on my hands in June. And it's disbelief more than anything. It's like most people... I think Jack will have something interesting to say off the back of this, but most people can't fathom why on earth you would want to take on that level of discomfort and challenge in order to do something like that. The idea of, you know, only having an unbroken sleep for 3 hours before you've got to do your next shift in the middle of the night and row constantly. The fact you're rowing for 12 hours a day, you don't get to shower, you got to wash yourself with some cold water and like occasionally, not even every day, and eat cold freeze-dry rations and warm freeze-dry rations sometimes, shitting in a bucket, you know, all the things that you take for granted in everyday life that the average person says, like, why on earth would you be interested in doing something like that? And I think we're all cut from a similar cloth where we think, you know, why wouldn't you? Why not find your limit and take on the biggest challenge and burden that you can find for yourself? And yeah, I think none of us are under any disillusion that it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of suffering involved, but I'm on this planet to feel the widest array of emotions possible and fulfill the hardest challenges that I can take on. And so most people, to give the short version, it's just like, why on earth are you doing that? They don't understand it. And I kind of stole Jack's answer there, but he said to me, you know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
you
why
know?
Wouldn't you?
That's your take, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, for sure. I agree. And the main reaction I get in this is, but people go, oh, what a rowing boat. I think they think Oxford to Cambridge, yeah. Don't they? And they can't get ahead and you have to explain. And then there's no support boat. And we're actually doing an independent crossing.
Yeah.
So an independent crossing is exactly that, independent, not part of a race, no support boats, no anything. Now, that's not saying people that take part in a race don't do it.
That's difficult.
It's just as difficult. Yeah. And they still do it unsupported. However, with some races like the Atlantic campaigns, there are two support vessels. So if something really goes wrong on the boat, they will have spare oars or spare water makers. So yeah, you can be bailed out. So independence is you're completely alone. There is no support vessel. We eat, poo, wash, shit, shower, shave, but we won't be showering or shaving. So I don't know why I said that. on that boat, we won't be getting off until we make landfall in the Scilly Isles.
And when he said eat poo, there was a comma between those two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're not actually eating literal poo.
I don't know how you feel about it. Like,
eating poo,
really
bad.
Oh, yeah.
Not, in fact, not I've ever tried it, but...
Stop putting him off.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, I need as much encouragement as I can get. do you, when you tell people about it, do you think that... I don't think a lot of people really take it seriously. Not that I want them to take it seriously. But unless you really care about explaining it to someone, like the grand nature of this expedition, yeah, I don't think anyone realises quite the.
No, that's the thing I've thought about as well, because ocean rowing is a very unique endeavour. I mean, and it is becoming more popular, but people don't get it. And as well, you know, because when you say running, everyone has run. Everyone in the, you know, even when you're a kid, you run around the playground. So everyone
relatable,
knows, like, people exactly, relate to it. Mate. You know, and it's easy, but not everyone has rowed, so people don't know what it's like to even row for 5 minutes, let alone for 3 hours.
Yeah,
you know, people, not many people have been across an ocean on a small sailing boat.
Yeah,
let alone an ocean rowing boat. So you don't know how big and how wild it can get. So that's why I think people find it hard to relate to and then just can't.
Do you feel compelled to explain it to people?
If people are interested, yeah, you know, I love explaining it,
but not through ego. It's not that you need to validate it by explaining it. It's just like, if someone wants to hear it, you'll
because I'm quite an inquisitive guy, you know, and I'll always, if someone's done something epic, like our mutual friend Mitch cycling to India and from India he's going to run up to the top of Mount Everest. And I'll always ask questions about that, like just the logistics and what the route he's going to take and the people he's going to meet. Because, so yeah, I don't mind. And it's not from an ego point. You're 100% right. I just, you know, if people want to know and people are genuinely interested, I'll tell them.
Do you find a lot of people trivialize it? So it's like every now and again, it's like, oh, Bruce, you're nutty doing more boat stuff. I imagine you got that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But people, and what I get a lot now is, oh, doing it as a team of four, it'd be easy. And I'm like, you have no clue.
interesting point to raise, actually.
You absolute spanner.
You Luddite.
Yeah. You imbecile.
I actually reckon.
You absolute moon chicken. You berserker.
Oh, Brucey.
But yeah.
Arguably, it's harder rowing in a team of four.
Especially with Jack's stroke rate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard about that.
Listen to him there. Right. H, next question, brother.
Can you wear a day sack at night?
25.
Oh, no way. That's what I usually ask him. No, did you ask him that?
My mate.
That's what I ask everyone, mate, when they post these bone fucking ask me anything on Instagram.
You shouldn't.
And my answer my answer to that is, can you wear a day sack at night? No one has ever been so bold. Next question.
24 hours in the day, fella. It was Luke Everett. You know him. Oh, Evzy. Yeah.
Evzy?
Yeah, Evzy.
I don't know.
No. Brown boots. Holes in his derby bag.
Hangs milk out the window.
Yeah.
Imagine this one. This one's quite serious. How likely is the risk of death?
Extremely unlikely.
So it comes. Jack's favourite thing about ocean rowing is ensuring that all crew members are clipped in at all times. So the fact that we're in the middle of the North Atlantic, completely unsupported, and we don't have an outboard engine to turn us around if we need to. Something goes overboard and you need to pick it up. It's so important that we stay clipped in at all time. We'll be wearing safety harnesses when we're out on deck. Well, throughout, and when we're out on deck, we'll be clipped into safety lines. And the reality is, the biggest risk, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, if we were to go overboard from a huge gopper, Brucey?
Goffer.
Fuck, I fucked it.
Gopping.
A big gopper.
What a gopping mistake.
Yes, now that's right.
We didn't introduce ourselves again, so...
Yeah.
14 years in the Royal Marines, these two. 14 years in the Army. And then Adam is a civvy, and he is picking up the military lingo very well. He's doing brilliantly.
I'm trying my best.
Yeah. He's doing well, mate.
So if a wave comes over and were to knock any of us into the ocean, the reality is you think you could just swim back to the boat or turn the boat around, but that can be extremely difficult depending on what the current's doing. And so that's probably the biggest risk. Clipped in is majorly important. And then otherwise you've got getting rammed by a cargo vessel
On that question about safety, statistically, ocean rowing is an extremely safe sport, and fatalities, which are rare but do happen, the vast majority of them are down to human error.
It was or swordfish error.
Challenging undertaking.
Skewered.
Yeah.
So
stay attached to the boat.
Yeah.
So can I just interject there? For sure. So the thing is, it's a dangerous activity done safely. And yes, there are low risks. However, Chris Martin, and I don't know the full details, but he was on the board of an inquiry for the reason we now use climbing harnesses clipped on is they used to use surfing leashes. Big goffer come over and washed a guy off through surfing leashes who had a surfing leash around his ankle. So
I think that it's a tragic story,
probably
worth sharing. I try and do it some justice. Yeah, so say you've got the prevailing elements behind you and someone goes overboard, and it's very easy for these things to snap with the forces involved between a person and a boat when the wave's breaking or whatever. And when they realise someone's gone overboard, they're not in any position to do anything else but watch him disappear over the horizon.
And yeah, that's exactly...
Which is a pretty...
It's tragic, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not a very nice.
I can't imagine. Concept. Like,
no, mate,
it would be horrific. Like, and what Brucey means by the prevailing elements is the wind was behind the boat, so it's pushing it in the direction they want to go. So when the guy fell overboard, they literally could not turn that boat around into the wind to go and get him. Yep. So they just had to watch his PLB disappointed.
Oh yeah,
over there,
fuck. Hopefully we've got a happy question, Harry. What's next?
Fuck's sake. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, maybe a more upbeat question next year. But anyway, long story short, biggest risk, falling off.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen because we're always going to be clipped on.
Yeah. Yes.
Who smells the worst?
Well, we'll find out, that's for sure.
I mean, Bruce.
Jack, how long did you leave your boat after you landed in
Jack's
Florida?
Pongos.
Yeah, there we go. Pongos is a slang term they use for army people. People
wherever
in the army.
The army goes, the pongos.
What? What does it mean? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, nice. Like the pongos. Pongos.
How long did you leave your boat when you landed in Miami before you came back to it?
So I took all the rubbish off the day because of what you boys told me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What? So what?
So all the rubbish, because these boys were like, it hummed.
Yeah.
The boat. So yeah, obviously everyone was boozing hard. I was like, guys, can we just quickly nip? And my best mate, bless him, the idiot, was like, obviously shite. Was like, Jack, you're not doing this. You've worked hard enough.
Who's that?
My Codge. You met the one with the glasses. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He was like that. Lad, step aside. I'll get all this rubbish off. And you've got to remember, some of that rubbish had been in there for 111 days.
Yeah.
And he's just in there like elbow deep. True. You know, foot pulling out this gaff, bless him. Yeah, good lad. Cheers, Codge. But yeah,
right, we
but your boat was.
We arrived in Barbados, had some issues with the authorities. Solved those pretty quickly. Yeah, and some idiot just said, "Oh, just moor it up on this jetty at Port St. Charles, outside of this Pier 1, like very fancy sort of restaurant thing." We fucking left it there for 3 days, mate. I didn't realise. You know, you're used to it when you're rowing on that thing, mate. It fucking stinks, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, left it for 3 days, got on the piss.
We'd everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and the general fucking mal odour of the thing in general. You could smell it from 100 metres away.
Mm. Yeah, your cabin just stinks. You just smell a bit mouldy.
Just when we got to Miami after that Bahamas row, after like 11 days on the move, and that flaky paint, that white paint that was flaking off the stench of the cabin. When we went back to the boat after and I put my head in for the last time, I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm going to have PTSD just thinking about this.
It's hard because it always
smell.
Yeah, it's like, you're like, where do these, like the fart stench just makes its way into everything and then just oozes out like over time. It's gopping, mate.
We've had a few horrible questions in a row.
Yeah.
What was the question?
Like, fucking hell, nothing in a minor surgery to me. But I remember changing over with Junior and he was like, oh, Brucey, check this out. And he was like, all our sleeping bags and roll mats were in the bow cabin, which is a fairly confined space at the best of times. And sort of squatting in there and lifted up his nuts and dick. And there's like an obscene inverse version of a fucking snow globe.
It was
It's just like dead. Because we had these
spreading everywhere.
We had these chili peanuts on the rations that we had. Chris and Junior's ball sack, the chili peanuts, mate, because that like, weird infection, really painful, mate. And he's lifted up his dick, and it was like, oh, this dead skin just fell off. Oh. And I was like, oh no, I'm about to go and sleep there, mate. Oh. And it was like, oh, Brucey, sorry, I didn't realise, mate. And it fucking got out and swapped over, mate.
Oh, mate, you were so tired, you just got your head straight down, didn't you?
Yeah.
Go on, H, mate, next question.
Right, so this one's for Adam and Brucey. How was the training row from the Bahamas to the USA?
It was good fun, wasn't it, mate? Oh, yeah, I loved it. As I said, I think it was in episode one, it was such a crazy adventure. The fact that we were able to stop on land, meet various people. We stopped on the island of Nassau, and then we stopped on Chub Key, and then on the Bimini Islands as well. Jack and I managed to scuba dive with hammerheads. Yeah, we stopped at the only family that were living on this Chub Key Island, and they taught us showed us a spearfishing location, caught some lobster, cooked it fresh. There was nothing else on the island, just beautiful beaches. And we never knew what was around the corner, so it was just mind-blowing throughout. And as we headed into the more shallow water as well, the fact that we were rowing through like 2 meters of depth and it was just perfect, like Gatorade blue, it's calm conditions. It'll be a stark contrast to what we see on the North Atlantic, but it was, yeah, real pleasure. It was like a really cool story just in its own right. I really enjoyed it.
I feel like there's a good amount of value there that you learn about life on the boat and shit.
For sure, yeah.
It's a fairly fucking harsh introduction, really.
It was fairly, yeah.
Mate, a lot of people won't do a training row of that length before they row an ocean. I don't know many people that have.
I don't know if it's worth mentioning that funny story when we were trying to get through that gap, mate. just when we, before we came in, that morning before we arrived in Nassau that afternoon.
Oh yeah, in the morning when you woke me up and you were like,
oh yeah. Adam, yeah. So I was running on my own. So Ads used to row 3 hours in the night. And then me and Jack used to do 3 hours. So Ads would row an hour and a half by himself or whatever. And we just alternate. So Ads would do
so 3 hours rotation. I'd do 3 hours, hour and a half with him, come off. Then you'd do your first hour and a half. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The point I'm trying to get to is at one point I was like rowing for an hour on my own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had a bearing that I was just following. And I was like generally rowing a sort of like same equivalent as rowing for a steady jog, really, to complete the amount of physical exertion I was expending.
Yeah.
And then I set off and Jack woke up and he came out just, flapping's probably the wrong word, like a bit irate, so it was clearly important what was going on. And it's like, Brucey.
Yeah.
Alarmed, yeah. Like generally, like really concerned. It was like, Brucey. And he sort of scrambled over me because I was in the stroke seat and jumped in the bow seat. And he was like, fuck it. Because he just woke up and checked on the GPS, man. I fucking realised there's a massive tidal current pushing us onto this fucking reef.
We had moved in an hour.
Happily rowing throughout the night, mate. Speed over water, mate. As far as I'm aware, I'm making brilliant time towards Nassau.
You know when people talk about intuition? I just woke up and I was like, because I wasn't due to come on, and I was like, Bruce, you're right, mate. And he was sort of, it was the witching hours, so he was a bit tired. He said, yeah, all good. So I looked at the thing and we were doing 0.7 of a knot, and I was like, right, that's not good. And then got my phone out to look at the nav, and like Brucey said, I was like, fuck. So I quickly got on the oars, and
the current got worse, mate.
Yeah,
so Jack even jumped both on, and the current was still like
we went from 0.7 to like 1.
Increasing, mate.
Oh, yeah,
and me and Jack was by this point we both realised the fucking gravity of the situation, I guess. And we started rowing slightly harder, mate. And I'm like, fuck. And then I'd started waking up, and I was like, oh. No, it's too late, mate. It's too late. We just got fucking stuck in for a bit.
We're fucking going. Yeah. And I just basically chucked Ads this spaghetti meatballs, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I said, get that.
True in the cabin. Yeah.
I said, get that down your head, mate. We're going to 2 hours on, an hour off.
Yeah, because we had been doing 2 hours on, 2 hours off until then. But
the conditions are so bad, basically, we couldn't afford to have one person on the oars, so we needed both.
Good fun. But apart from that, we made it to Nassau. And that was interesting. Yeah, well, we could get onto that story as well.
Yeah, that'll be part three. next question, H.
Just before we move on, I've meaning to fucking worm this one into a question for fucking ages. I get sick of doing all this cool shit and Nutty being still stuck in the Marines. He's got his notice in now.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to do this North Atlantic business.
Yeah, so myself and at this current moment, me and Nutty are still serving. I'll be out in February and you'll be out...
October,
yeah. But with his GRT leave... he'll be fine. Next question, H.
So this one is for Nutty. How do you feel joining the team after not doing the training role? What would your advice be to someone going into a new environment / workplace to make that process as seamless as possible?
Holy fuck, who asked that?
A really long question. That is. Whoever asked that question, thank you. Yes, it was a shame that I missed the first part of it. I would have loved to have done it, and I was keeping up with Jack and Brucey and Adam at the time, and watching their row. But yes, I did miss it. Yeah, and I would really like to have done it.
Yeah, I think
that. Hey,
you missed it, but you were working.
What can you do?
And what helps is obviously. So that question is not like. Nutty was just cherry picked and he didn't know anyone. He great relationship with Brucey and myself. You know, we go back to some pretty hard times in Brunei. That makes it sound a lot more dodgy than it actually was. All work, but yeah.
All work, no play.
All work, fucking no play.
No play.
No, seriously, like no play. So yeah, you know, like that made the integration slightly easier, and it's just one of those things. I think if you're a nice person, you're a good person, you can integrate into any sort of team.
But what advice would you give to anyone that was thinking about ocean rowing? How would they go about it if you were to advise them?
God, that's an interesting question. pick a very good team. Pick a very good team and get to know the people that you're going to row with. What else is there? I'm shit at this.
it's good.
It's a great time for a shameless plug of Mission Atlantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you plug them, Brucey?
I just did, didn't I?
No, I'm not very good at this. Put on the spot.
I'm thinking about it.
Same question to you, Jack. What would you, to someone that was interested in ocean rowing, not necessarily encouragement, what sort of advice would you, building on what Nutty just said?
Build on what Nutty said, you know, you've got to pick a good team. I don't know how quantifiable this statistic is, but they say 70% of teams that row the Atlantic don't speak to each other after.
70,
yeah. Or it might be 70, but it's high. Again, I don't know how quantifiable it is, but having spoken to a lot of teams that have rowed the, I can believe it, you know.
Here's another spurious open-ended question. What do you think makes a good team?
What do I think makes a good team? Understanding. You know, you
pulling in the same direction.
Pulling in the same direction.
Figuratively and literally.
Hey, you always want to pull in the same direction, baby. No, you've got to pull in the same direction. Like, if we're four people, and if we want different things from this row, and I mean, they can be slightly different, but you know, if they are cataclysmically different, it's gonna become fractious.
If I might build on what you've just said, I think that's one of the beautiful things about the team we have now. Everyone's got their own different level of area of interest. Mm. But for us all to work together, it takes a certain amount of compassion and understanding. And like, what's the fucking word? Like, lack of ego to like allow someone else to say their thing and consider what someone else's idea is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Definitely. I feel like I'm comfortable in this team.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I feel very comfortable in this team.
Yeah, something that we outlined, which I'm very glad we did as well a few months ago. We've all got slightly different minor pursuits and reasons that we're doing this intrinsically and extrinsically. But the fact that we've outlined kind of our order of priorities of what we're trying to achieve here. And number one is get across safely. So when we're in a pinch and we don't know what's like, everyone's pulling in a slightly different direction when we're, you know, food deprived and sleep deprived. It's listen, boys, the number one objective was to get across safely. Are we acting accordingly with that objective? Then the number two objective was to remain friends at the other side, right? So like you said, it's we're going to get, our relationship's going to get stretched at various points, all four of us and individually as a group. And so making sure that the decisions that we make sure that we are acting with that in mind to stay friends when we and talk to each other when we get to the other side. And then number three is obviously the world record as well, because you know, the world record can't come without prioritizing the other two first, the safety and the friendship. They're holistically more important things.
Yeah.
And then
I
obviously
feel like it'd be such a shame to share such an experience and not be able to like talk about it between each other afterwards. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like we're all volunteering through different mechanisms for the same sort of experience. I suspect for actually quite similar reasons.
Yeah.
So different ways of going about it. Yeah, it'd be a horrendous shame if we didn't able to reminisce and stay in touch after it's all done.
Because that happens.
I'd like to do another one as well.
Like. Yeah.
Harry's interested.
Yeah. What are you saying, Harry? You in for the next one?
We've already shook hands on it, so there's no going back.
Here we go. You heard it here first. H, I think we've got time for one more question.
Brown or white bread?
What a boring fucking question. Why does it matter? That's a fucking bread.
Someone's not had a freshly baked loaf of tiger bread.
I like sourdough. Sourdough's okay. What does that count as? Both?
Fucking posh cunt. No, it is good. Mate, I like there's got to be something said for like, you know, Tesco value. Chip butty white bread.
Here you are. Let me introduce this. When do you most enjoy having bread?
In the field.
Bacon sandwich.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
White bread.
And you'd want white bread then.
Yeah.
There you go. Question answered.
Yeah.
Easy. Swap.
Let's do one more, shall we?
Yeah, go on.
Quick one.
Do you remember the bread that you got given on in the field?
What, like with rain stew?
No.
That was white bread, also, coincidentally.
You're always the voice of wisdom in this group, Bruce.
Do you not remember?
You know, oh, the burger, yeah. The burger bun.
No, no, so you've got peanut.
Right, boys, we're on the clock. Yeah, one right. More question. Me and Bruce.
Jam and peanut butter.
Yeah.
I would swap that with...
For anything.
For anything. Sorry.
Go on, H.
Tangent.
Right, yeah, this is an important one. Can we follow you live?
No.
Wait and see what happens at the other end. Depends how loaded our camera is.
There's been a huge amount. No, there hasn't really been a huge amount of contention. There's two amongst the four of us are really keen on live updates, and
you can guess which two that is.
Yeah.
Professionally wise, I completely understand it,
and also as well, it helps drive donations.
Definitely,
it does. Yeah. It does, and I'm not totally against it. I'm just kind of like the idea of the only connection you have with the outside world is.
The most austere
satellite phone package, uplink package I can buy in the least amount of minutes
I want to be used in case of emergency. No contact.
Agreed. The best way to think about it is the fact that we have the external contact and we'll be uploading things doesn't mean that we're taking in things from the outside world. We're not going to be necessarily listening to what's going on. We're not going to be.
But we could take in things from the outside world.
But we. We'll elect not to, Brucey.
Definition.
But the idea is. Well, yeah, we will be upload. You'll be able to track us, our Garmin, where we are on the North Atlantic at all times. We're going to be doing daily updates, weather permitting. We need the solar power energy in order to give us the electronic power. Obviously, us getting water comes before transmitting data let you know what we're up to. But we're going to keep you in the loop via videos, predominantly on Instagram. And we're going to make a feature-length documentary that won't come out live, but that will tell of the entire story from Bahamas to Southampton. Out the other end.
A slightly personal question. I know we've discussed this earlier.
How
do you feel?
From Brucey as well.
Yeah, I was like that. Oh, God, we're on the clock.
And how do you feel that I've got a bigger penis?
Like with all the travels you've got around the world and all the adventures and experiences you've had, do you feel like it changes the way you experience those by having to document them?
Definitely.
For an audience?
Yeah, definitely. There's a price to be paid. So initially when I started, it took a lot of mental bandwidth for me to be thinking about how I'm going to talk to the camera while enjoying it and doing it. And there was a huge cost associated with that, whereby if I was doing something, I wouldn't be able to associate any mental bandwidth to it actually enjoying myself. It would all be about what am I going to tell the camera? What's the lighting? What's the angle? You know, when am I pulling the camera out? But as I've done it for a few years now, I can do the talking on autopilot. No, there's a rough formula of how I'm going to talk and what I'm going to do. And I can get the benefit of recording things and documenting them, but also enjoying them for myself. But that's not to say that there's 100% a trade-off always. And when you're completely disconnected from the outside world and not worried about portraying it in a certain way to the external world, like you can have a more profound internal experience. And yeah, for none of us, we don't want to jeopardize that feeling and the experience of the expedition, but you know, it's bigger than us, and there's money to be raised for charity. And also there's something that I've learned in my everyday life, which is you can enjoy a moment fully 100%, but then if you don't document it, you don't get to relive that. So there's a trade-off within documenting it and then being able to like with the Bahamas expedition, sometimes it was a bit stiff where we had to record things and we didn't want to, but now we can watch those videos for years to come.
I think that is a great moment to end episode two. And if you want to hear more, you'll have to tune into episode three. No, thank you very much for watching, guys. We hope you enjoyed that. There's going to be more of this to come. Don't worry, more laughs, banter, and all that good rowing information that you want to hear. Thank you for watching, guys. Peace.
Ciao.